Right. Welcome to episode 108 of Decentralized Revolution. It, of course, is a podcast from the Libertarian Party Mises Caucus. I'm Aaron Harris. I'm your host for tonight. Brandi Bishop, if you were with us last week, you know Brandi's going to be kind of part of the regular crew. We intend to do these on Monday nights, but there's a couple of things going on with Mike Heiss, of course, who was with us last week, and just some scheduling stuff. So we pushed the Wednesday today. So, and I was able to get two really good guests kind of on the, on really short notice. One of my favorite people in the Mises Caucus, and that's Dave Casey from Delaware. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for that. That's a big compliment. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. The reason I like you, Dave, is one of the reasons I like you is because I can pick you up and put you in my pocket.
That's right, dude. We are a beautiful odd couple. Every time I see you, I want to give you a big hug.
So tell people a little bit about what you do. Two podcasts that I really like, and you do some other stuff too. So tell people, introduce yourself.
Yeah, thanks, man. I do a podcast called Dave versus Goliath most Monday nights with a buddy of mine. So I don't do much of the solo stuff. I don't need to talk to myself. I'm into talking to other people. And that's a lot of fun, man. We've started that right after COVID just to kind of keep the lines of communication open. And that kind of blossomed into something really cool. And I also co-host The System is Down with Dan Smotz. We just did one today with Mike Termont. That was pretty sweet. You should check that out. Kind of handed him the business. I'm loving it. I got Jeremy Kaufman coming on next week so we can talk about Pork Fest and all things decentralized.
I love that guy, but he makes me laugh.
He's the best.
And our honored guest this week is Keith Knight. Keith, you helped us out on, was it three or four stops on the Take Human Action tour? And he's kicked it off each time, and I was at the one in Nashville, and he did a great job. So, and I realized I hadn't had him on the podcast at all, the interview style. And so I was like, oh, we'll get him on here. So, for people who don't know you, Keith, tell them who you are and who you work with and all that.
I organized a book titled The Voluntarist Handbook. These are 50 essays that convince me to be a libertarian when I was previously a progressive. That is the original contribution that I tried to make to the freedom movement. I also work at the Libertarian Institute with Scott Horton. Our goal is to create a free educational archive so anyone interested in the concepts of freedom can go to libertarianinstitute.org and look at Winston Churchill, minimum wage, agricultural subsidies in our search bar, and check out the freedom position on any topic they are interested in. That is basically what I do.
Yeah, that's great. I had the opportunity to besmirch the reputation of Winston Churchill on last week's show. He's one of the 20th century's great villains. And Libertarian Institute is where you need to go. And Sheldon Richman, I interned at the Cato Institute back in 1996, and Sheldon did a few little seminars for us interns then, and I learned a lot from him, and he's still out and putting out good stuff. And so if you've never read Sheldon Richman, especially some of you young whippersnappers, you need to check him out. He's got a great book about called Separating School and State. And that's a good segue to say hi to Brandi. So like you said, you were a progressive, Keith, or came from the left. I know Brandi did. Dave, what about you? Were you?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so I'm outnumbered. I was a Reagan kid in the 80s. So, it's great to have. I thought this was like an alt-right pipeline.
That was the word.
Brandi, tell how did you get first interested in politics? And before we get into the stuff, how'd you end up on our side of things? I guess.
Well, it all started, I got interested in politics during the Bush era. I was very anti-war. I was also very anti-capitalist. Was very into communist philosophy and socialism and all of that fun stuff. When I was a quote-unquote, I guess I was a progressive, I guess that's the word. I voted for Ron Paul in the mock election in high school because I still liked Ron Paul. Even like I liked him even back then. Even though I wasn't a libertarian, which is very interesting. And then I got more and more into like the communist philosophy and even a little bit like anarcho-communism, stuff like that. Yep. Then actually started to move away from it as I got older, started to own my own business, to like learn how things worked in the world. And then I read Milton Friedman and watched some Milton Friedman lectures, and Thomas Sowell were like the two that really was like a gateway into like learning about economics and realizing that a lot of the problems that I was saying was blaming on that I was blaming on capitalism was actually the government, and I just didn't even I didn't know, you know. Yeah. And I think that that's a lot of people on on that side of things.
I think we had a few things kind of lined up to talk about, and one with the first thing was the whole alien thing, like that was part of Tucker's first broadcast on Twitter. Am I right there?
Yeah, I didn't watch what Tucker said. Did you? You did, Keith?
Yeah, I saw him passively mention the UFO issue. I got nothing on this issue, so please, well, someone else take over
about the whole Tucker thing. You watched his thing?
So he had a 10-minute upload to Twitter, and right now it's at 65 million impressions. Oof. And it was just such a relief to see that someone who left Fox is getting great attention, that the fact that he mentioned aliens was secondary to the fact that he mentioned Ukraine probably blew up the dam that they're pinning on the Russians, just like in November 15th of 2022. They said Vladimir Zelensky came out and said, the Russians have bombed Poland and NATO needs to respond. Turn out, of course, it was the Ukrainians who bombed Poland and murdered two civilians. And then Tucker's talking about passively mentions that everything's a lie. 9/11's a lie. We don't know what happened on the elections. It was very shocking. So the fact that he mentioned UFOs was actually trivial in comparison to everything else. That I'm like, we're being visited by an alien species. Look at this. CNN is getting outnumbered again. This is terrific. Yeah, it didn't even jump out to me. So I'm sorry. I'm trying to get through the Ancient Aliens Handbook. I've basically gotten through the whole thing. I've looked at all the pictures. I can't keep going on this thing. I get it. The rocks are impressive. That doesn't prove aliens. Yeah. But the things are very high and heavy. So maybe they are. I'm not sure.
Well, I think that's kind of been my take on like conspiracy stuff as someone who listened to Art Bell back in the day. I don't know if you old enough to remember Art Bell, Dave?
Not me, dude.
Oh, man.
And I'm pretty old.
Yeah, man. But yeah, he had a great show, but I won't go into that. But my kind of theory is that just like Tucker had a thing on the Kennedy assassination toward the end of his time on Fox, and it's like one of those things where like, oh, it's a stupid conspiracy theory. Nobody believes it. And then all of a sudden, like now everybody pretty much believes that either the CIA killed Kennedy or they let it happen, or like they know that the Oswald acting alone is just is not true. And so the same thing with aliens but I think some of these things are manipulated, especially like the alien stuff, to distract us from stuff like Ukraine. Because that's Pride the Month. Stuff that could actually
we should be
get
focused
us all
on
killed.
Pride Month.
Yeah. Well,
I think we are desensitized about aliens. Like, I feel desensitized about aliens. I don't even care. I'm like, okay, I've been watching alien documentaries and whistleblowers for over a decade, and I watched this interview with this one, and I was like, he said absolutely nothing new that I haven't seen in multiple other
it's weird
alien docs.
That can happen in this climate, though, that a story like that could get buried by, like, they'll mention it, and it's just like, yeah, well, there's other stuff going on that people are more focused on. That's really kind of insane in and of itself.
Well, and also,
it's been a
like,
slow boil.
I heard that the guy, like, I don't know much about the story at all, but I did hear that we know who he is and where he's at, and he's very safe. So I'm kind of a conspiracy theorist. That's a red flag already. Like,
yeah.
So when the government starts talking about, oh, look at these aliens that we have over here, everybody, like, all right, now I'm starting to lose faith or at least pay attention to what kind of story they're trying to craft.
Yeah, and I'm always, like, I think it's, you know, the playbook seems to be, throughout history, divide, conquer, unite, you know, and then when people kind of get together and start looking at the government, you know, like they did around, you know, 2008, 2010 with Occupy on one hand and the Fed on the other, it's like, oh, okay, let's start talking about CRT and gender stuff, and here we are. So, like, government will always use things to really divide people, and then what do we need to bring them back together, which is a huge crisis, and what could be an even, you know, what could be a bigger crisis as far as headlines than, you know, aliens or whatever. So it, I think they're always prepping for something that they, if they need to play that card, it will have been sown in people's minds.
I mean, I think there's a reason why now no whistleblower actually, like, gives us concrete, like, evidence, like, ever. Like, they're always just like, I know, I was working on a project. I mean, I didn't see any aliens, but, like, I was on, you know, I was involved in the project, and that's how I know. And I, if they are aliens, and they are, the government is, like, having these whistleblowers, they're like, what would a whistleblower be called if they were, like, planted whistleblowers, just fake whistleblowers? But if they,
I think they do that.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, no, like, yeah, so if they are, maybe there really are aliens, but, like, they want people to think about aliens in a certain way and not in how they really are, potentially. I don't know. I'm also a conspiracy theorist, so I could go on rabbit holes with all that.
I don't know
stuff.
How the government has treated this person so far, but whenever you see them treat, you know, like, oh, we need to protect this whistleblower. Well, you can rest assured that they are. They're protecting that person.
Yeah.
Probably because they're an agent of the state. That's usually, you know, it's not Snowden. It's not, you know, Ross Ulbricht.
Yeah,
other people.
Yeah, speaking well, it's never conspiracies that are, like, in opposition to the state. They're like, conspiracy theories are bad. Also, Russia conspired to install Trump, and then they conspired to plant Hunter Biden's laptop, and then they Russia was killing American soldiers in Afghanistan for bounties in exchange. Also, whites are conspiring to oppress all blacks, and men are conspiring to oppress all women. They are the biggest conspiracy theorists of all, and then have the nerve to call us conspiracy theorists. And anyone who advocates voluntary exchanges, that's just a conspiracy for the rich. All this dumb fucking shit that they push at us actually applies to them tenfold, because there's actual evidence on our side. See, we use actual documents, such as the Nyet Means Nyet document by William Burns, which verifies that they knew that bringing Ukraine into NATO and running war games with them would actually provoke a potential war with Russia. We use primary documents, and they're like, well, I feel like Putin's the next Hitler. They're the ones with conspiracies. We have primary evidence, and that's why they call us conspiracy theorists. They call us racists, even though we judge people by the content of their character, and they explicitly use things like affirmative action, which clearly judge people by the color of their skin, and then call us racist. That is the role of calling someone a conspiracy theorist, in order to increase the amount of insecurity that they have, therefore to silence them. It has nothing to do with whether or not conspiracies exist or don't. There are thousands of people every year who go to jail for conspiracy to commit robbery, conspiracy to commit murder, conspiracy to commit fraud, and they call us conspiracy theorists with a straight fucking face. No. Of course, it applies to them. It does not apply to us. So we can stop being insecure about it and continue to advocate the principles of freedom.
Yeah. Boom.
Ow!
These demons do love doublespeak, man. That is a tactic that they use constantly. They don't just lie. They project their evil onto other institutions, other people, whatever. You know, Hillary Clinton saying that he colluded with Russia. She literally was colluding with Russia. So, like...
If you go to the Clinton Foundation website, you can actually find that the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia donated between $10 and $25 million to the Clinton Foundation. That counts as collusion with a foreign government who is hostile, considering the Saudis committed a mass murder campaign in Yemen to oust the Houthi government of Oman, I think is the name of their capital. So they, again, explicitly have proof that they colluded of course, they use these ridiculous vague terms that could mean anything, with a foreign government and then pin it on someone else. Yeah. Every single time, it's the exact opposite of the way that things really are.
Hey, everybody, look at that evil empire over there. That's awesome.
Watch out for the Chinese.
Right.
They are coming. They might murder innocent civilians in their quest for global dominance.
And that's
in the midst of Libya, Syria, Yemen, Afghanistan, Iraq, Somalia, Niger.
The audacity.
Well, the China thing is something that I kind of hear about a lot. So my mother-in-law and actually my wife's, all of her family on her side are back in Taiwan. And so people will always, they know of that connection. And so they know I'm into politics. And so a lot of times people who just kind of know me will be like, hey, when's China going to invade Taiwan? Right. So like, it shows me that if like normal people are like worried about China invading Taiwan, which, you know, it is what it is. That's a whole separate show, but like, it definitely is. We got to have the enemies lined up. So if one, you know, things go sideways in one conflict, you know, the pivot to Asia is the phrase that's been, I hear Scott Horton talk about a lot, that, you know, there's a lot of people in government who are like, okay, we're done. You know, we're eventually, Europe's getting boring. We're going to have to, you know, go do this stuff. And so it really is. Like, you know, I posted the comment from Colin. It looks like that the CIA literally did invent that term to discredit people who analyze things. So being a conspiracy theorist, all that is basically saying the rich and powerful of this world have an agenda and they work to, achieve that agenda. Sometimes on the up and up, sometimes not. And so, like, if you simply analyze any problem with that sort of framework, then, you're anti-Semitic, you're this, you're that.
I think you can also become a delusional.
It's to shut down the conversation. Yeah. That's all it is.
I think you can also become a delusional conspiracy theorist, though, where it's not just you're analyzing everything. You start to think everything's a conspiracy. Like, absolutely. I see that a lot, too, where it's like you almost have to be conspiratorial about your conspiracy theories. Like, you know, like, you have to, like, analyze even the conspiracies that you're presented and being like, okay, is this actually something that, like, I think a lot of people will put their whole heart into the conspiracy and be like, this is 100% true, where sometimes it's you have to stay open-minded and critical and skeptical. So there is an aspect of it that can make people slightly delusional,
which, like, is why we go back to what Keith just said. It's like, just use the stuff that's on the front page of the paper.
Yeah.
Right. And show them that they're doing the things that they say they're not and that they're putting on everybody else. Like, it is kind of like if you're, you know, being concerned about the shifty looking guy in the corner when there's a guy with their gun to your head, you know. So the stuff that government does right out in the open is like COVID, like 3 years of that, and people. But it's funny, the same people who buy that conspiracy theory are the same ones who have the, you know, yellow and blue flag in front of their house and all that. But
I try not to get lost in the minutia of the details. Like, somebody came up to me and was like, oh, so, or if I was like, oh, I don't know about 9/11, man, three buildings, two planes, you know what I'm saying? And they were like, oh, so you're a conspiracy theorist? I would go, yep. Yes. Yes, I am. So if I was like, no, I'm not that, like, you're immediately on the defensive. It's like, yeah. Do you have a question about what I just said? It's like, I'm fine to own that. And, you know, I don't want to talk about, oh, did they use holograms? Oh, man, were they laced up with bombs? Like, I don't care, man. I know the nature of my enemy, the state. So I know that, like, even Scott Horton, you know, we talked hours about this. And he was giving me a lot of shit because I believe some of the things that he doesn't. But at the end of the conversation, I was like, well, do you believe that Bush and at least Cheney had advanced knowledge of this? He was like, well, yeah. And I was like, well, okay. Well, that's pretty much all I need to, like, there was a conspiracy afoot. You know what I mean? That's good. I don't care about the details. Like, we probably had some knowledge of that stuff, though. Good enough for me. You know what I mean? So if you know the nature of the state, you don't need to know. Like, if people think that things like these events happen like by accident or just like randomly, then you're at a disadvantage, right? If you believe that they happen more on purpose, I think you look through a different lens a little bit. So I tend to, I'll admit, like I tend to, oh, there's a disaster here that CNN is talking about. Okay, well, why are they talking about that? So I usually, the Nord Stream pipeline, if you were conspiracy theorizing about that a year ago, you were probably right about some of the theories that you had to have about that. Right. So these things come out. I don't know.
So when it comes on the side to, when it comes to Rumsfeld and Cheney's foreknowledge, there is an article by CBS which cites Donald Rumsfeld giving a memo to one of his secretaries and saying, gather everything related and not to UBL, Osama bin Laden, as well as SH, Saddam Hussein. Gather all things that are relevant and irrelevant, something to this extent. This was cited in Fool's Errand by Scott Horton. And this is one piece of evidence that you can actually use to say, well, they didn't say, hey, quick, find the truth about who attacked us. Russia, China, Saudi Arabia, an African country. Who are we up against here? Is it, local white supremacists who are, doing these terrorist attacks? They said, look, it happened, and we created a narrative immediately. Dick Cheney explicitly lied going into Iraq, saying that, I think this was on Meet the Press, he said, it's been pretty well confirmed that Mohammed Atta met with a senior member of Iraqi intelligence in Prague, and that's where most of 9/11 was conspired about. So you certainly have these things. You have Secretary of Transportation Norman Mineta under oath saying that, well, Dick Cheney is the one who ordered the stand down order for the planes who were going to get shot down going into the Pentagon. However, here's another case of us having verifiable proof that they lied about the official 9/11 story. So here is my LPMC speech, which I gathered, knowing that I was talking to Aaron today. Yeah. Here's what George Bush said about 9/11 on September 20th, 2001. He said, Americans are asking, why did they hate us? They hate us because of what they see right here in this chamber, a democratically elected government. Their leaders are self-appointed. They hate our freedoms, our freedom of religion, our freedom of speech, our freedom to vote and assemble and disagree with each other. Well, that is pretty self-serving. Here is actually what Osama bin Laden said. This was published by Harvard University in a book titled Al-Qaeda in Its Own Words. Bin Laden said in February of 2003, it's referred to as Tactical Recommendations or Sermon for the Feast of the Sacrifice. He said, then the fighters realized that the gang in the White House could not see things clearly and that their leader, that idiot they obey, was claiming that we envied their lifestyle when the truth, which this pharaoh would like to hide, is that we are attacking them because of their injustice toward the Muslim world and especially Palestine and Iraq, as well as their occupation of the land of the two sanctuaries. Clear as day, it is the mass murder campaigns in Palestine and Iraq that occurred between 1991 under Bill Clinton, the first Gulf War, and 9/11, which took place, which is what created the animosity, which led to the potential blowback of 9/11. So even using primary documents, we can verify that the official stories are absolute bullshit on every side. Whether they go deeper and how deep they go is always up for discussion. The point is, verifiably, there is no evidence that the official 9/11 story is true. We were attacked out of nowhere because they hate us for our freedoms. So we have all the evidence right here. Unfortunately, the people are under mind control, so we have to eventually develop a narrative which resonates with people, which allows them to no longer associate emotionally with a ruling class and associate with us. The point is, yes, they're conspiring, and they don't apologize. So they're psychopaths, not people who are accidentally mistaken.
Well, part of breaking that narrative is, if we were in physical space, I would stand up and everybody would applaud Keith. Mm-hmm. You come out of the bullpen throwing heat. I love it. But as far as like people do have an emotional tie to the narrative. And one of the ways, again, as someone who Scott Horton and I are the same age. And so growing up, I was a weird kid, if you hadn't figured that out, but when I was like 8 or 10 years old, I would watch ABC World News Tonight with Peter Jennings every single night, right at 6:30 after the local news. And so I learned about the world that way. And then I kind of was picking up on things. I was like, yeah, they're lying about Reagan. And then here I am 30, whatever years later, a Rothbardian. But like, that's how people in my generation and before, it was the newspapers and the big three channels. And, you know, then cable news, you know, look at the role they played during 9/11, Patriot Act, Iraq, all that stuff. And now that paradigm is kind of, there's something going on here, which is why I think it's really, really interesting to see all these things, these new things happening. So like Tucker going to Twitter, what'd you say, 65 million impressions? So isn't CNN lucky to get like a million viewers on a thing? So like six, and okay, even if like people watched it four times, that's still what, like at least 10 or 20 times bigger than the average CNN audience. And so the fact that the, you know, the legacy media are losing their grip, I have my ideas about what that means, but Brandy, what do you think about all that? As someone who is young enough not to remember all that stuff, do you see that tension of these two models of like the alternative media versus the legacy media?
Yes, but I also have trust issues, even with a platform like Twitter. I personally think that, how do we know that Twitter isn't just potentially trying to become another form of legacy media, just in a completely different way? So when I look at Twitter, I think that that is entirely possible. Like, because even YouTube is somewhat of a decentralized platform, but also kind of not. It's moderated pretty strictly. It's definitely going to change. I think that legacy media is going to have to change. They're going to have to switch their model because of the younger generations just aren't going to do that. They're not going to buy DirecTV. Does that even exist anymore? But like, they aren't going to buy that anymore. So they're going to have to change it up. But how do we know that they're not just going to create new like influencers and go on YouTube? And we don't know, but they technically are the same people, just doing it differently.
Yeah, and this is why anarcho-capitalism is so vitally important, because it's not what do people want, the goal of accurate information. The actual question is, who decides what is accurate information? And the only process to properly determine who decides or what is accurate is to have no monopolies with mm-hmm. regard to things like security and truth. So that's why things like competition are so vitally important, because yeah, maybe Truth Social or Twitter or Minds.com or Odyssey.com right now is the truth centerpiece of truth, where people go to get accurate news. But that doesn't mean it's always going to be. So a process of competition where no group has a legally recognized monopoly on who decides what goes and what is truth and what is moral is the best process to approach some of these things, because all of the potential downsides, all of the vulnerabilities that voluntarily funded competing companies have apply many times over to coercively funded monopolies such as the state. So yeah, maybe Twitter is being co-opted by Elon Musk, and he's going to put Neuralink inside of all of us, and it's going to be devastating. And that's why we need to have competitors constantly. It's a process, not a result. So yes, I totally agree with Brandy. It's an importance of recognizing the importance of a process, not a certain group of people who are going to be given a certain set of rules and a number of powers. It's much more of the competitive process, which Hayek talked about 50 years ago, and the Paul Krugmans of the world still have yet to appreciate.
Yeah.
Go
ahead, Dan.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Aaron.
No, you go. You go.
It blows my mind, but as much money as big oil makes and big pharma makes, they don't make as much as big data. So that's never lost on me, right? Like, and that's not even tangible. Like, I get why it's worth something, but that's crazy that it's worth the most out of all the big stuff. So Elon Musk I mean, you guys probably know better than me, but I mean, he is literally a government contractor, right? We're talking about cloud contracts, mm-hmm. military contracts. He uses NASA stuff. He uses their space. Yep. So like, I'm grateful. I got my Twitter account back, and right now it's the best place to be. I get my news, reliable news from Twitter, because you can shop it. It's like getting a morning briefing. I love it. Like you can, it's really beautiful. But you guys are right. I mean, we got to keep watching that. He is the Neuralink guy. This is all the data that you could possibly want, plus all the military contracts. And he just brought in Linda Yaccarino. So Brandy was just talking about like, oh, what is his intentions? His intentions is to turn this into Twitter plus Xfinity plus Netflix plus YouTube plus email plus all the things. You know, like it's just a hub for all the stuff. Content creators. So there's some exciting stuff. I like how he's trying to bring people into the fold and help them make money. Ultimately, I think that's because he wants to funnel in everybody here. Mm-hmm. And who knows what he'll do then. But Linda Yaccarino, that's Universal, Xfinity. That's where she spent time. The Ad Council, the President's Council. She's as fascist as it gets. So yeah. She's going to come in and help him make it that thing that you were talking about, I think. Although and maybe that's a concession he made.
But
he's know.
Potentially trying to create a monopoly in a monopoly of information. As yeah. what it looks like. I have trust issues with Elon. Like I find Neuralink very suspect, and I love how he's like, we need to regulate AI. We need to regulate AI. And I'm like, you, because he says that there's these impending dangers. It's like, you literally want to put microchips into people's brains, and you get mad because the FDA or whatever is saying that you can't do that right now. And now you're talking about regulating AI because it's super scary in this abstract way. I don't know. I find it very sus. He's a little sus.
He not a little, man. That guy is weird. That guy is a weird guy.
And like, I think he's likable, actually.
He is. He's a likable weirdo, right? Like, mm-hmm. like, would you like leave your kid to hang out at his house for for an afternoon? Like, not that he.
Well, I don't know him personally, but strangers are out.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if I would leave a child to go hang out with like any. Man,
strange person,
strange man somewhere. Yeah. Like, I don't know about that.
Well, I also think that, you know, so I think it was Robert Barnes had a theory that I don't know if this was his original or somebody else's, that someone had looked at like Yaccarino's like history of like her likes and retweets and stuff like that, and people, and that the theory was that she's some sort of like closet religious conservative normal person who's trying to, you know, was like an undercover agent getting into. I find that sort of not very convincing. But we'll see. But
that sounds like some QAnon shit. I'm not ready to attach my name to, bro. I don't know.
But
the conspiracy about the conspiracy to counter the conspiracy.
Right.
Yeah. Everyone could like stop conspiring, please. I just want to get this under control. I don't know who's putting a chip in my brain. Just knock it off.
She seems like she's right out of like the human resources culture, bro. She thrives in it. You know?
I completely agree. And like, that's what, you know, thinking of things like Neuralink. And so I remember like 10 or 15 years ago that like Peter Thiel was supposedly going to be like the libertarian, you know, benefactor or whatever, because he gave a bunch of money to Ron Paul. But that guy is like, that guy's straight up weirdo too. And like Palantir, isn't that, aren't they like the, one of the kings of this data AI? Like it's all crazy stuff, and they're making billions and billions of dollars from the government to do all this stuff. And you can't trust any of them. And especially one of the things that I really, when looking at this stuff, why I'm concerned, and Brandy's right to be concerned, and it is like you mentioned, Dave, getting on Twitter and for news. And like, personally, like I have to like plan, like, Twitter is like, I got to put on a hazmat suit, like an emotional hazmat suit, go in there, do what I need to do and get out. Because like within like 2 minutes, like I go to see what, you know, what our Mises Caucus account is doing or I go to look at somebody, you know, like Robert Barnes or you know, somebody, I heard somebody tweeted something, I go check it out. But on the way to there, I get in my feed all these like fake liberal, progressive, common people who think, you know, I get Stephen King, oh, yeah. I get George
Takei. They want
Takei.
You to see that. Ain't that and funny that everybody sees those guys? I can't believe that's still going on.
But the thing of it is the person with the Ukraine flag on her Subaru, when she gets on Twitter to go to The View or whatever, on her way there, she's seeing Matt Walsh and whatever
else. I'm seeing
else.
Both. Because well, I hate that, because both piss me off and they know it. Like both sides makes me enraged, so I get it all.
So what is a woman was really good, though. Blew me away.
No, I personally just hate Daily Wire. I hate the way that they talk about these issues. I definitely think that there is a lot of it is like they're constructing a narrative. They're actually taking a lot of stuff from the leftist playbook, from the progressive playbook, and utilizing it for their own means, which in my, as someone that came from the left, as someone who's been canceled from the left and lost a job, like seeing that start to happen on the right and that kind of mentality really fucking irks me a lot. Like it bothers me, and people cheering it on, I'm like, you guys are doing the shit that like drove me nuts on the left.
But the thing of it is, if they can make everybody, you know, if they can make a quarter of the country angry within the first 5 minutes of opening up an app, like what can't they do? Like what are they doing as far as, you know, like the subliminal advertising, like if I don't think they're doing stuff like that, but they could. And the fact that everyone has, again, I remember reading, you know, 1984 and Brave New World and stuff in high school. And it's like, oh, how would they ever do that technology wise? And now like everybody's got like a supercomputer in their hand 20 hours a day, and they are they're addicted to it. Adults.
SOMO is digital. We didn't know.
Right. Yeah. And just go into any waiting room, any place, like, and everybody, like I make it a point now, if I'm like in a waiting room, to either leave my phone in the car or not look at my, leave it in my pocket and just look at all the people.
You're a stronger
like
man than me.
Well, believe me, I'm not, which is why I'm making an effort to just like observe other people and seeing how they're living life. And it's like, is that really what I want to live my, like, ugh.
It took a generation of demoralization. Hashtag Yuri was right, bro. That's what it, you know, it took that much time, and COVID really damaged people. And we were already a nation of hypochondriacs and hover parents. It was just like, it was perfect. Oh, now we want to focus on mental illness so we can, you know, strip you of even more rights and just declare you mentally ill and fucking blackback you. That'll be the next phase.
But it's for your own good.
Right. You know, with the
exactly to prescribe you. And
With the like Twitter thing, what I've noticed is that, for example, like right now, like Pride's a hot topic, and like everyone on one side is, you know, it feels like just because like one thing happens somewhere in the country, everyone's like, oh my God, this is an epidemic. This is happening everywhere, you know? And I try to look at things a little bit more objectively, like where it's like, okay, this did happen, super fucked up, but everyone's like automatically just assumes like, see, this is an example of like the deterioration of everything. And I see that kind of happening on both sides on Twitter and even on Facebook, like where like on the left, they do it with like racism. There anything that has to do with like someone being racist or something, like someone was racist somewhere in the world and they're like, look, this is an example of how every single person in the US is racist. And I feel that way with like Pride, where it's like, okay, someone did something fucked up at Pride, which they shouldn't have done. And then everyone on the right is like, look, this is an example of how all gay people are just these horrible degenerates and why we need to, like, you know, I see it kind of happening on both sides, and it's super fucked up. And it's honestly been a topic that's been driving me nuts lately, because I am bisexual and I am someone that's like, I'm I'm a little gay, so like I don't really care if like certain people think I'm a social degenerate or not, but it's weird watching it kind of morph into like this giant issue. Like, it's evolved in just the past few months.
I don't think that they'd be able to do like keep us. I think the phones are the central part of that. Like, you couldn't have done the COVID operation without the mm-hmm. phones. Like, we have to get the information together, lockstep, same time, across Earth, yep. you know, yep. to do something like that. And even like in the Twitter sphere, it's like if something happens or there's an event, everybody knows about it very quickly. And then mm-hmm. you all talk about it at the same time. Whereas, you know, just 20 years ago, it's like if something happened in your town or city or in the country, like at 6 o'clock, you'd find out when you yep. sat down to watch the 6 o'clock news or something like that. Just we're all on such heightened alert all the time and looking for that, you know.
I watched a video about this that said that we're in a global tribe. Like, we're like, instead of it being like smaller tribes, like back in the day, we were connected into almost this global tribe, and we're still behaving as if we're in like a small tribe. You know, we're still acting the same way as we would if it was just a communal tribe, as we are, and treating this global tribe the exact same way. And our brains just aren't built for it.
Yeah, in group, out group psychology, stuff like that. Yeah, it's very, the playbook is an old playbook. And like Dave said, they just have very highly specific and surgical, right now figurative, but soon literal, surgical ways to hook people up to, what they want. So like back during 2020, like I was immediately like the whole George Floyd thing, which, you know, if those of us who are libertarians, I think most of us have gone through a phase where we just like watch all the cop videos who like, you know, shooting dogs and, you know, abusing people and all that stuff. And like literally like something as bad as that probably happens every week in America. Not always to a black person, but like, I mean, if you want to find something bad that a cop did to a black person just about any week, you're going to find something that's sickening and horrifying. But why hasn't there been something quite as big as that since then? Why did they pick that time and that thing to that be the thing to let people do protests right after they just got done locking everybody down? But oh, you can go out for that. Like the fact that people couldn't see that
was tied to the election.
Yeah,
I think
right. It was obviously. Yeah. It's transparently manipulative, and because it's like, why pick that one? Like again, the whole thing with the media is what Michael Malice says, that they're often factual but not truthful. And I think that that's both within stories and within the overall, you know, budget of what they put out. It's like what they choose to cover when is very much of it's designed for something. And the fact that only a few people kind of can see that is what makes it frustrating to be red-pilled, whether you're an ANCAP like most of us or you know, somebody on the left who's somewhat red-pilled. So
I think, and I also think the right thinks that they're impervious to it, that like that the media can't use the things that trigger them against them, you know, because that's the thing, is that George Floyd was, I remember when that first happened, 2 days before the George Floyd thing happened, it was, remember the bark, the Karen in the park with the dog? Like, and
you broke up on for just a second
there. Oh, sorry.
And with the dog,
the Karen in the park with the dog,
the Karen in the park with the dog, that like was, there was a black guy who was bird watching and they had like that big altercation. That was a few days before George Floyd, and I remember that getting like so much attention, everyone freaking out about it, being like this racist bitch or whatever. And yeah, then a few days later, I'm pretty sure it was days, George Floyd happened.
We got a better one.
Like, it feels like things can go viral intentionally. Like, it's almost like set up for certain things to go viral at a particular time because they kind of needed that.
Well, now that it takes no courage to be, against racism. In 1823 and 1923, it took a lot of courage. There was a very high economic cost, monetarily and opportunity cost, to say that people should be judged by the content of their character instead of the color of their skin. Today, there's no cost. That's why there's so much demand and people buying up this product called I'm Not a Racist. So that's why the fact that it's so easy to talk about and no one's risking anything is the reason we see it so much more. However, when you get guys like Roland Fryer, the youngest Black economist to ever have tenure at Harvard University, in July of 2017, he came out with an empirical analysis of police use of force and said that he found no racial disparity when everything is controlled for between Blacks and whites getting shot by the police when you take account of what age the person is, what gender the person is. That's important because men are half the population, yet 90% of those shot by the police. But that's not because the police just hate men and are set on a male genocide, because men tend to be more violent. So you get statistics like that and empirical evidence, and it doesn't phase anything. Why? Because the cost of being anti-racist is basically zero, and you get to stand on this high mount and give this great sermon called I'm So Good. So the fact that it makes people feel good and the fact that there's no cost to engaging in the activity. There was another Black professor at Kentucky State University, Wilfred Riley, who came out with statistics saying, okay, it's very clear. He wrote a book called 10 Taboos, Things You Can't Talk About. He said, it's very clear most white violence is white on white. Most Black violence is Black on Black. When it comes to interracial violence, 80% of the time the Black person is the aggressor. Now, how is it that we hear about none of this on the mainstream media? And it's simply because they have a bias called cherry picking. Every time, even we at the Libertarian Institute do it, every time you choose to report on one thing, you are necessarily excluding all other things to report on. You've heard a lot about the war in Ukraine. Most people have not heard about the U.S.-Saudi coalition in Yemen, which has murdered tens of thousands of children conservatively between sanctions and bombing. So all of these atrocities are the result of people having an awareness only of what they're actively being told. And the good news is that they have to put it in airports, gyms, at restaurants, because people don't actively seek it out. Joe Rogan is not in airports. He's not in restaurants. And he's not being pushed down our throats at every other aspect of society when we go outside. People are actively searching for things that they find fulfillment in. That's why things like the LPMC are so vitally important, because they give people that outlet to actually say, you know, maybe men versus women is not the true divide in society. Maybe it's not Black versus white. They even played the young versus old card recently. They said, you want to go outside? Okay, so you want to kill grandma. That's why you don't want to wear a mask. And that's why you want to go outside. They're constantly preaching these false divides. But people like LPMC are constantly saying it's not about old versus young, Black versus white, Muslim versus American, or Muslim versus Christian, American versus Russian, even decade or two after the Cold War fucking ends. It's actually about aggressors and non-aggressors. And this gives people an actual narrative to live on. It actually gives them an attempt to find meaning in all of the things that they do and a philosophy to live by that is consistent as opposed to any aspect of statism. So yes, the media is fucking terrible. Thank God Tucker's on Twitter. Maybe it's going to be hell on earth. Thankfully we have the LPMC to save us.
Yeah. But what if some people are almost creating imaginary aggressors too, like perceived aggressors? Because I feel like I see that sometimes too, where that some people are just almost creating boogeymen.
People will always create boogeymen all the time. So the question is, if people are always going to create boogeymen, do we want to have in a society where some people have a monopoly on violence, or a society where there is no recognized right to initiate violence against peaceful people? Under any circumstance, there is no justification for a state, and that's why the LPMC is so vitally important. And voices like Judge Knapp and Dave Smith are so vitally important. Yeah, there's always going to be crooks and murderers and rapists, unfortunately. and other types of socialists, unfortunately. The question is, recognizing that that's a constant, what are we going to embrace and what philosophy are we going to give to people in order to replace the absolute nonsense that they already believe, rich versus poor? What a joke. It's like they're not even familiar with the fact that Black immigrants to America have a income that is 30% higher than Black natives to America. How does the racism conspiracy theory account for that? Has nothing to do with hard work or merit or skill. Just racism explains all disparities. It actually is the result of skill, merit, and hard work. So when they realize that that's less attractive, we have to have something more attractive to give them. And the reality is there is a clear distinction between right and wrong behavior, which is voluntarism versus violence. And that's why the LPMC matters. So yeah, I get that there's always going to be aggressors and people who imaginate aggression, but at least in a voluntary society, there's a cost you have to bear in order to say, oh, I have a theory that this person is aggressing against me. When there's not a state for you to grab onto, it's much harder to do that. So that's why it's a superior system.
Do you think somebody mentioned Jeremy Kaufman earlier? I think one of his he's going to debate somebody. Is it Gene Epstein at Porkfest? And the debate is, because I just had Gene on. He was on episode 107 of Decentralized Revolution. So the last one that went up last week. I'm pretty sure it's him, but my memory is what it is these days. But it's him debating Jeremy Kaufman on the proposition it's easier to turn a straight person gay than it is to convince a normal person to become a libertarian.
Wow.
I think I know what Jeremy is trying to do there. I think that was his idea. But like, how effective are we? And that's kind of agenda for that question, but like, because we are trying to convince people, but is anybody listening?
I do think a lot of people are getting, because I believe to be a libertarian, you can be socially conservative, you can be socially liberal, but the whole point is that you don't want to push those values onto other people. To change what's happening in culture, that's a cultural thing, that's not something that you want to legislate or make the government do. But I think people get confused when they see libertarians push their own social views, which they're allowed to have. Obviously, we all have our own opinions on social issues, but people will be like, oh, that's what the Libertarian Party thinks, because like these certain people say these things and say that that's even, some will even say that that's a libertarian take, when it's like, it's not. It's like their personal opinion on a particular topic. And I do think that there can be a little bit of a misunderstanding there.
That's why the only thing that matters is public opinion. And that's why they rely so heavily on propaganda, from the social media to the legacy media or whatever. That's why they have to hit it so hard, every day, bombarded with it. Fifth generation warfare every day, or it wouldn't work. So that's kind of a white pill if you think about it. Like, they literally, they're like Coca-Cola. It's like, we have the number one beverage in the planet, but we got to spend $1 billion every month to make sure that we maintain this thing. It's like, okay, like, well, I think we can keep up. I have hope there that will crash. I don't know, just a quick little white pill.
Yeah, I guess the empirical approach would be to see how many people identified as homosexual in 1974 and how many people identified as libertarian in 1974, and then compare it to the number of people who are libertarian today versus back then, and then analyze the amount of money that's been allocated to the LGBTQ community versus the libertarian community, and the amount of time per capita that's been spent on media access from homosexual advocacy to libertarian advocacy. It's something that's hard to prove empirically.
I mean, you think people could get like convinced to fuck a dude? Like if you're not gay, like, you think,
right.
I don't know, man. I like, this is the thing that, like, maybe you could get convinced to like transition to another gender if you thought, like, if you still got to fuck girls, but like, I don't know if a straight person is gonna, maybe in name only, but like, I'm gay in name only, but so, I don't so actually fuck gay, gay people. Day. Like, you have to fuck, yeah. You have to actually have sexual relations with men or women to be gay. So if you're willing
to
do that,
explain it
then.
To her, Dave. Do you want to explain? Well,
he's trolling us. He's trolling anybody who is participating in any kind of political activism outside of New Hampshire. Because his answer, and like I said, he's coming on the show, my show on Monday. He's awesome. I'm a huge fan. But he will tell you that you're wasting your time doing anything other than participating in the Free State movement, Free State Project. So all libertarians need to centralize. I know that goes against your better judgment, but centralize right there in that hub. And the state will be no match for you.
Well, he's a libertarian Zionist, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. We have to physically concentrate and control our own geography. There's nothing wrong with that at all. However, the assumption is that libertarians who are communicating to the masses outside of New Hampshire are not reaping benefits from it, whether it's psychological benefits or monetary benefits. So I would have to ask Mr. Kaufman, who I have nothing but respect for, giving us the greatest thing ever, Odyssey.com, as well as library. I'd ask him to clarify, because I am simply not sure what he's going by.
Well, I think what his point is, hey, just stop trying to debate your normie friends and move to New Hampshire to make it better for those of us in New Hampshire, which is, I get that, and which is why I think that the Mises Caucus, the Project Decentralized Revolution sort of strategy that, you know, Mike and Dave Hines wrote most of it and I, you know, edited and we put it all together, and that basically it is kind of impossible to convince everybody. The whole Prague, Gary Johnson, Justin Amash, Lincoln Chafee, whatever, like, oh, we're going to somehow convince 38% of American voters to vote for, you know, a libertarian president, and then how is he going to get that through Congress? You know, you need public opinion on your side, and so the much more doable thing is to sell the localism and the decentralization, because the people here in northern Knox County, where I am, are going to have, you know, if you can convince them to not trust what goes on in Nashville and Washington, D.C., then you might get a much freer place that's going to look very different from what it would look like wherever Brandy's at, wherever she's at in Massachusetts or whatever.
Boston.
So, like, the point is to not make everybody buy the whole argument, but to start seeing how a little bit of liberty and a little bit of decentralization will make their lives better. And then you get momentum going on that without knowing it, people are acting in ways that sort of promote the libertarian decentralization, whether they really know it or not. And even that, I don't think is a 5-year strategy. Like, it's not going to get done while I'm still alive. So
if the majority of people used to believe in, say, ancient Greece, in things like Zeus, did people no longer believing in Zeus come about as the result of everyone changing their opinion? Or was it a few people who changed their opinion and then everyone else followed along? I think it was the fact that a few people changed their opinion and then everyone else followed along. So the fact that they say things like, you're not going to change everyone's mind, is the equivalent of saying, you have an alarm in your house, you're not going to stop all burglaries. Yeah, but I'm going to stop probably this one, or I'm going to drastically increase the cost of the marginal utility of someone inviting themselves into my house in the absence of their consent. Yes, I get that it's much longer. The point is, the more popular these ideas are, the more people are likely to embrace them. One metric you can use is, say, okay, Frederick Bastiat came out with the law in 1850 in France. Are there more libertarians in the world as a percentage today than there were in 1850? Frederick Bastiat wasn't there passing legislation. He just wrote a book. I know he was part of Parliament, but it's not like he, you know, declared anarcho-capitalism on all of France or anything. So you can actually see human beings change their mind in real time. When it comes to things like Iraq, it's one thing for people like Tucker to say, well, Iraq was a debacle. But the fact that now Afghanistan has gone from a holy war you can't question to, well, the Taliban took over in 11 days, so even that is something we can't even support. Going back to the Second World War, it turns out that even Winston Churchill said things like, after all the sacrifices of the righteous cause and all of the money and human lives spent, we find ourselves in the midst of worse perils than those we have surmounted. So right even after that, guys like Winston Churchill are saying, well, the reason we need a state is to fight wars to protect us against aggressors. And even after the most justified war ever, we still gave half of Europe to Joseph Stalin. So eventually, people are coming to the conclusion that, well, as bad as, you know, the voluntary sector can be, the state sector doesn't yield much greater consequences than we otherwise would get. Even with things like, even if you don't think it's a result of public opinion, you can say that, well, you know, it was very hard to convince people that taxi cabs should not be granted state monopolies to operate within a certain jurisdiction. However, things like Lyft and Uber and bicycles became more popular as a result of the state intervention in the first place. So, yes, we don't need to convince everyone that something is good. But eventually, you do have to convince a certain amount of people, either convince them or make them so insecure in their current position that they stop advocating it. And both of those are very plausible. The empirical evidence lies in the fact that there's more libertarians today than there were in 1963 when Walter Block and Murray Rothbard are sitting in Rothbard's apartment and Block asks Rothbard, how many libertarians are there? To which Rothbard says, probably 15. The fact that there's more fit than 15 today, tenfold, is a reasonable guess that it's easier to turn someone libertarian as a result of getting people like Ron Paul and Dave Smith on big platforms than it is to turn someone into a homosexual, Jeremy Kaufman. Please, Gene Epstein, don't show up to Porkfest and let me take your place.
Yeah, I think someone commented that it might be Matt Kibbe and not Gene. But anyway, it's going to be a Porkfest. But the only
all right. So either way, Jeremy Kaufman's trying to convince us that people can't be convinced. Thank you, right. Jeremy. I look right. forward to attending that speech.
I mean, but but look, the three of us in this group were leftists. We all came from the left. How can you say that people can't change their mind when, like, I was I was a commie. Like, I changed my mind.
I think Jeremy's going to have 1,000 homosexuals that were previously heterosexuals as old as age 18, and he'll say, all right, one by one, give us your story of how you became homosexual. And then Gene's going to have his people. This is so ridiculous. Ron Paul went on the debate stage and changed people's minds and made it okay for people to say, you know what? I'm not some hippie and I'm not some ultra Christian. I'm a Ron Paul guy. The way culture generally changes is through blind copying. When people say, you know what? I see this person in power who has a high amount of social status. I like what they do. I'm going to start associating with their views and values so I can increase my social status. Yeah. That is very reasonable for us to embrace. The fact that Joe Rogan has had Dave Smith on, I don't know how many times, that Dave has been on Kennedy's show, the Megyn Kelly show, the Tim Pool show repeatedly. It's not impossible, and we are reaping a great deal of benefits, much like every doctor isn't going to cure every disease, but he can cure individual patients. When people see the Dave Smiths of the world, you are literally helping people escape mind control. I had a former intelligence officer, Chase Hughes, on my show, and he said, if I had to describe mind control in one word, it would be repetition. That is what the media uses in order to control the minds of the masses.
That's Twitter, bro.
That is repetition.
But even more powerful than Twitter or the media is public schools. And that's what I think is the toughest thing we're up against, is that, again, looking at what public opinion was in 1985 versus what it is now, you could have not done COVID in 1985 because every you know, 80% of adult males over 18 would have told the cops and everybody to go take a hike. I'm not wearing your mask, right?
Well, like, guys, just, whatever we do is going to have to take a generation. We got to go back and watch that Yuri thing. Whatever we do is going to take a generation because this one's been lost, right? I mean, I think. The Free State is awesome. Like, it's got a beautiful libertarian culture there, and they're moving people there. They got all this energy, and that's great. But the Live Free or Die State was that in 1945 they adopted that. Like, the culture. You know, I live in Delaware. This is a corporate cum dumpster. It is disgusting. But it's our flag is liberty and independence. He's got a gun in one hand and a hoe in the other. Like, they understood the shit. The culture is built in. And it took a generation or two to completely demoralize them and get them to embrace socialism and, you know, nihilism. But it can be, if you tap into that, I mean, I know we probably everybody in here is an ANCAP, but just go drop some basic shit on some people. Yo, you down with the Bill of Rights, man? How about that Constitution, bro? Don't talk about Lysander Spooner and how the Constitution didn't work with your local, you know, conservative buddy or whatever. Like, don't do that. And if you go in the hood, like we just did the other day, I try and tell them about that shit too. Yo, don't listen to these BGM people. Go get the original promise that your ancestors wanted you to have. Go get all these rights. You need to be strapped. This is Wilmington. Are you crazy? You know?
What's the guy, Yuri?
You like name? Showing up late for things? Don't you hate late IRS payments? yes. Unfortunately, people are much more likely to go by, you know, individual stories than pure logic. But so what? Then we got to embrace that. There was a guy in, I think, 1978. His name was Deng Xiaoping, who took over after Chairman Mao. And his goal is like, look, we got to inject some capitalism into this socialism because the Great Leap Forward and the Cultural Revolution were terrible. So he didn't say, hey, everyone, China is switching to capitalism and free markets. We were wrong. They were right. What he said was, we're going to embrace socialism with Chinese characteristics. So he allowed people to keep their identity while changing one arbitrary aspect. So we can say to the conservative, hey, you know the fact that God commands us, thou shalt not murder? We take that seriously. We apply that to the state. And that's why we're pro-life and anti-war. You know, thou shalt not steal? We apply that to an organization called Congress or the IRS. And when it comes to the left, hey, believers in equality, we don't think a group of people called the state has a right to acquire resources through theft or declare war against innocent people or regulate a psychopath word for violently dominating complete strangers for unjustified reasons. So we embrace things like equality and thou shalt not murder and thou shalt not steal. We just do it consistently so we don't have to strip people of their identity. So it's not like taking a heterosexual and making them homosexual. It's like taking a heterosexual who picks up girls at Zip's bar and telling them, hey, go to Lucy's bar instead. It's a lot closer to that than drastically changing any vital aspect of people's reality.
Yeah. I was just wanting to see if has anybody kept count of how many times Keith has said homosexual tonight. I love it. So the Yuri guy you're talking about, it's on the tip of my tongue what his
Bresmanov? Bresmanov, I think is his last name. He went on with...
The demoralization. I wish I had a good Russian accent.
Yeah, it's the five-step process, bro, that they use. He was the KGB defector, and he went on with G. Edward Griffin in like the early 80s. If you haven't seen that, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. It's a classic.
It's dimly back in the cobwebs here.
I feel like we've been through probably like... three cycles of the whole thing though. Like it almost is just like a perpetual thing, you know, like once they normalize, it's like, well, until the next time they do another.
I don't know if it's intent. I don't even know if it's like always intentional. Cause think about, I live in Boston, right? Like we had the Boston Tea Party throwing things into the harbor and now we're Taxachusetts. like if you think about it, like it's almost not even, the shifts aren't even an intentional thing. I think it's almost like a just gradual. I think with some issues it's intentional, but with some, I don't even know. I don't know if that was like an intentional demoralization on the people here.
Well, the once great cities of this, I mean, Philadelphia is a cesspool. Baltimore is a cesspool. Washington, I mean, D.C., you should abolish it. But, like, the great cities are not so great. So what made them not great?
Yep.
100 years of progressivism probably didn't help the sitch, you know? And, you know, Delaware, I government. Can't speak for other states, but we've had 30 years, I think, of pretty, like, almost 100% Democratic control. Yep. Voters still... You could get every Republican, every Independent, every Libertarian, every Green, every Constitutionalist, and you get all band together to start a super party, and you wouldn't have the votes to take on the Democrats here.
Yeah,
so,
or in Dayton, Ohio, where I moved from, like inside the city is, yeah, it's like Detroit or Baltimore or whatever. Yeah.
Dave, what city were you referencing where you couldn't take on the Democrats?
Well, I live in Delaware, so Wilmington here is the major city, I guess. I just mean like the whole state has been controlled. We've had Republican governor, or excuse me, Democrat governors, full state. They control the state house, everything. So they've had pretty much
at some places
dominated.
It's at all the way at the state level, but in a lot of places, you know, it is the local thing. So
Boston, we had
go ahead.
In Boston, we had Charlie Baker, who was a Republican governor, but like, was he though? Like, if you look at Charlie Baker, he like wasn't. He was. I'm pretty sure he's like gonna endorse Elizabeth Warren. Like it's like, how could he even be considered a Republican governor?
We have legit communists in our state house. Like they're endorsed and working with the Working Families Party and the DSA. Mm-hmm.
And you have that
man,
one lady
who's
doing that stuff to her kid or whatever.
Oh my God, dude, we got this. Yeah, she just got elected to the state house. Oof. She's got two trans children and one gay child. She herself identifies as a non-binary queer. She set precedent in the state. This makes me, I'm so fucking triggered already, and I have been for months. She petitioned Medicaid and won to get, like, apparently the Affordable Care Act says they can't discriminate based on gender. So she was like, she started transitioning this kid at age 4. Started
Jesus
putting him in dresses
Christ.
At age 4. I know, man. It's
awful.
This is the new Munchausen syndrome.
She should certainly be in prison. When it comes to what Thomas Sowell originally said is, it's not that people don't understand logic and statistics if they apply themselves. It's that people want heroes to cheer and villains to hate. If you were to ask the average person in Delaware who their heroes are, who do you think they would say? You just did a Adam Kokesh man on the street interview. Who's your hero? What do you think result you get?
Believe it or not, Joe Biden is still very popular here amongst, you know, middle-aged to older people, especially in like more affluent areas. So
I didn't know anyone was enthusiastic about Joe Biden. Like I thought it was more
still,
like apathy.
They love if he comes to town. I mean, he doesn't do it. Hasn't since he's president. I don't think maybe once or twice. But yeah, they love it. They love that crooked smile so much. It like it harkens back to something like the old politician that just would tell you whatever you wanted to hear. Joe Biden is that, man.
Yeah.
He came in with that DuPont money. Once they got out of politics, they were like, you're our guy. You will control this. You'll be our credit card, military industrial complex, big pharma guy. We'll just we'll use you.
Yeah, so the fact that the voters are so dumb, as they are everywhere else, not picking on your state.
Sure.
But the fact that Joe Biden is what came to mind when you said whose people would say that their hero is a testament to what Sowell said many years ago, that it's heroes and villains what people want, not logic and statistics. Maybe that could be our next great candidate. It's Dave Smith plus someone who's able to give us a vision of a great hero, something that comes to mind off the bat, just thinking of this, not putting anything in stone. But the fact that the Wright brothers were competing against the federal government, a couple bicycle shop owners competed against,
Dayton,
I think it was called the Langley Project. They were able to build an airplane and outpace the state. These are absolute heroes for the cause of freedom. I now have access to more places on planet Earth than a lot of very wealthy people just a few generations ago, because those people competed against the government and embraced a much more free market approach than the state did. So I think it's about finding heroes in order to change the culture that we've already agreed is vitally important to change, so people hope to see the heroes, admire them, and hope to emulate them.
But is that not, so, that's like influencer culture.
Good.
Degree.
Can't get away
no,
from
no,
that.
No, I'm not, I'm just stating, like, for, like, I'm not saying it's bad nor good. I'm more saying, like, isn't that what you kind of mean is, because what would be the heroes of today? In my opinion, though, like, I consider someone like Thomas Sowell, like, a hero, like, these very intellectual thinkers. But then I look, I'm like, okay, what are the intellectual thinkers of today? It's like, okay, Ron Paul, he's little, he's old. like, what do we have, like, younger intellectual thinkers? Yeah. Or
I'm looking at people who build shit, who do, Jeremy Kaufman, perfect example.
Jeremy Kaufman is a good example.
But is that, is that like a content creators?
Oh,
or building,
yeah.
Right? No, but isn't that what you mean by build shit? Well, I guess the Free State Project is a little different.
Well, and he's done Odyssey and the other thing, and yeah.
So yeah, he builds stuff for content creators. I just mean, yeah.
Wait,
like,
he
we
built
should
Odyssey?
He built Library, LBRY.
Oh, I don't know.
And he's somehow involved with Odyssey, right? I mean, that's
yeah. So Odyssey, I believe, is the web version of Library, which is the blockchain attempt to get Odyssey decentralized.
And you know who else, too? People have been giving him shit lately because he's got a position on reparations they don't like. But Maj Touré is a fucking hero. I'm telling you. So that guy's, I mean, like, we talk a lot. I talk a lot on the computer about, you know, philosophy and stuff and what we should do about current events and all these things. He's literally in the streets every day doing free classes, raising money, raising awareness in Philly, which is, again, like, it's kind of the, you're going to have to go to the demon's gates at some point, right? If you want to, like, win some people over, and, like, they're in the cities. That's what I would do. They're stacked up.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But yeah, and all the statist heroes have tons of dead bodies, and not to mention internment camps behind them. So the fact that we might say something like, yeah, you know what, Jeff Bezos is a hero because he increased the accessibility of products and services to tens of millions of people who are much poorer than otherwise would have had access to had Jeff Bezos never existed. The creators of YouTube, who have given us access to more free content than our grandparents could have ever imagined, yeah, those people are heroes. The creators of Wikipedia, who have created a free online encyclopedia, not because some psychopathic state mandated and conscript them to do so, yeah, they're pretty much heroes. Steve Jobs, yeah, he's a hero because I can talk to my brother when he's in Afghanistan inside of a war based on lies in FaceTime in real time. So, yeah, the people like Steve Jobs, the Wikipedia inventors. God, what's the guy's name? Jimmy something or other.
But do we want someone like Steve Jobs to become president or to become a politician?
No, that's
no, we don't. But we can still use him as a reference point to get people to associate us with something positive. These people admire Franklin Roosevelt, the gold confiscator, the murder of hundreds of thousands of civilians in Tokyo in Operation Meeting House. They admire people like Harry Truman of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Lyndon Johnson, the mass murderer of Vietnam. And we're like, well, the conditions in China aren't great. I mean, look, I'm sorry, we're going to have to make some concessions, but at the same time, we have to play this game a little bit. Not, we also have to commit those war crimes, but we have to talk to them on the level that they're actually at.
Yeah.
That's actually really tough. I mean, to say that America has a war culture is such an understatement. I mean, it's just built into the whole thing. That's tough. I mean, because foreign policy should be at the forefront, right? If you're trying to win somebody over as a libertarian. I agree with you, by the way. I'm just like, that can be tough sometimes because of the hero worship of the military and the service and all the things that come with.
Hey, guys, I am so sorry. I thought that this was going to be an hour. I actually have to take off. I appreciate you having me, though.
No, Keith, we'll have you back on anytime and keep up the great work. And we'll put links to your stuff. What's your Twitter handle?
More importantly than my Twitter handle is a free PDF of the Voluntarist Handbook. Check it out at libertarianinstitute.org. Okay. But on Twitter, I'm @AN_capitalist. Thank you guys so much for having me. Take care.
Keith. Bye.
Thanks, Keith. And also decentralizedrevolution.com/108. We'll have links to Keith and everything else. If you had to name one hero besides Ron Paul, who would it be? Living or dead?
You go first, because I gotta think.
Jordan Peterson's up there. People that say brave shit, man. Bob Marley, dead.
Mine's Johnny Cash.
Oh, wow. Okay. Look, yeah. A hero? I mean, do you just love his music, or why would he be your hero?
Let's just say we share some personal characteristics that how he responded to them are how I would like to try to respond to things. So, and just listen to the song Man in Black, if you haven't in a long time.
The last album he put out, man, was fantastic.
Yeah, the stuff for American Records with Rick Rubin. And yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, I will say Thomas Sowell again. Thomas Sowell is one. And I think someone that's like a little bit more modern.
Michelle Obama.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's tough, man. Like, so many of my heroes have disappointed me.
Yeah, well, this is, I try not to make heroes out of people. Oh, Camille Paglia. I don't know if you guys are familiar with her, but I'm a huge fan of her and her writing.
I haven't heard much out of her in several, like,
she's so mouthy and spicy. I love it. I wish she doesn't do podcasts anymore. Or I don't think she ever did. She doesn't like the podcast format, I think. She's very, like, particular with, like, culture and art. And she's kind of, I think she has, like, something against the podcasts. I don't know.
She's just, like, super old school. I need to look her up because I, back in the day when we had things called magazines that you would buy, like, her stuff was in a lot of different stuff, and I always enjoyed those. So
I feel like she predicted a lot of stuff that has, like, culturally started to happen these days. And I've always really enjoyed her writing, even, and watching her lectures, even though she like goes on these wild tangents. But I don't know, love that.
Shout out to my man Rich.
Snowden, that's a good one.
Here in Knox County, Rich is a great guy. I think we probably better wrap up. We're getting there. We've talked a lot. I think it's funny that Keith is like, oh, sorry, I thought this was an hour, but like he messaged me. I was like, oh, I need to go, and like he just kept talking. So
what a guy. He's brilliant, man.
No, he is great. He is really great. And he's even like he's just a funny guy. Like he's.
I like when he curses. I'm not used to that. And I've always loved his cadence. I don't know what it is, but it's, well, there I was, and I came in, and then, it's got, I don't know, something really unique about the way he delivers his shit. It's like,
and you gotta that on a Wednesday in June with us, he has a white shirt and tie on for a podcast, coming correct.
That's great. Like, all business.
It's like Don Draper or something. So our intention all along with this has been to do this on Monday nights for the foreseeable future. And then we had the couple different things happen on Monday. I think everything is good to go for next Monday at 7:30. If you like this, come back then, share this with people, and we'll see. I think I have a pretty great guest lined up, but it's like penciled in and he's going to confirm with me. So I don't want to put it out there and have people be disappointed, but we've got other, once we get our reps in and I think it's going good. And we're going to go through Mike's Rolodex and get some of these people on. Hopefully everything's okay. Mike has got more important matters on his hands right now. So Dave might be with us Monday. We're going to see, but me and Brandy will be here unless something untoward happens. So Dave, tell people again, thanks for coming too, by the way. Thanks for helping us out. And I could hang out with you anytime. And I haven't listened to you and Dan much here in the last month or so, so I need to get caught up on that. So what else is going on with you?
Yeah, man. Thanks for the invite. The Mighty Mises Caucus. You know, I love you guys. And shout out to Mike Heiss and Emily and their beautiful baby that'll be here very shortly. That's going to be great. Can't wait. I can't believe he's going to be a dad. I'm just so excited for him. Yeah, man. Go follow me on Twitter. I just got that back. And right now, Elon's still in my good graces. So he even gave me my burner accounts back. So I don't know. Right now, he's cool with me. Other than that, yeah, go follow me on YouTube so you can catch that Jeremy Kaufman show on Monday, and we'll talk about free states and libraries and odysseys and all that good shit.
Yeah, sounds good. Yeah, Brady, do you have anything? You're still on Twitch, which I still am not 100% sure which is because I'm old, but what's going on over there?
Well, I'll actually be live tonight in about an hour to 2 hours, an hour. I'm going to be playing some Elder Scrolls. I play video games and just, like, shoot the shit. Okay. So, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I appreciate it, guys. I'm going to go watch some baseball. My Cincinnati Reds are calling up some of their good young players, so it's not painful to watch anymore. Mm-hmm. It's still painful, but not as painful. So that's what I'm going to do. So I appreciate it. Everybody, takehumanaction.com. To get involved with the Mises Caucus, to get on our email list, to become a recurring monthly contributor, all that good stuff. And I will check Twitter like once or twice a week. So if you need to get in touch with me, at Liberty Aaron on Twitter. Thanks, guys.
I love how we did the piece at the same time.